Hey there, I'm Catalina Villegas. I'm the host of Rolly's Experts Explain Everything podcast. Rolly is the platform where journalists find experts for their stories. It is created by journalists and for journalists. And as a journalist myself, I love to find fascinating people on Rolly, experts with so much knowledge and insight, and yet it rarely makes it past the headlines. So today, I'm bringing on one of those experts to answer all those burning questions I've ever had about their field. Today I'm chatting with Philip Parker. He is an expert in small business credit card acceptance, and he is the founder of cardpaymentoptions.com. It's so nice to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
Philip, this is a topic that I don't know a whole lot about. In fact, all I really know about credit cards is that I take this little piece of plastic to a store, I give it to someone, and I get an item or a burrito in return. And after that, I have really no idea what happens. Can you fill in the gaps for me?
Yes. So essentially, there's a whole variety of services and products that exist on the business side for you, for them to take your credit card payment. And so when you hand your credit card over to a business, essentially they have to have equipment to be able to take that credit card, and then a service provider who can process that transaction for them. And so when you swipe your credit card, it records that transaction, it pays the merchant or the business owner out. And then if it's a credit card, it goes on your bill and then it's paid 30 days later. So one thing that's not common knowledge about the credit card acceptance side is that it's actually considered a line of credit for the business, since they're getting paid by the banks before they actually collect the money from you.
Oh, that's so fascinating. I didn't actually realize that. Tell me, is this different than a digital payment? I feel like I'm confused on that front too. Yeah,
sure. I mean, the term digital payment has gotten it's a very broad term now. Credit card payments can be considered digital payments in most cases, because it really is just a digital transaction that's happening between, you know, some computers and servers. Most people, when they think digital payments, they're thinking something along the lines of like Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies. But really, credit cards are kind of the same thing as digital payments. It's just that credit cards are really more of your old, you know, traditional payment acceptance method that's been around for a lot longer. So sometimes people don't think of it as a digital payment, but in reality, it really is.
You know, I think we've all gone into a convenience store and then seen a sign that says $5 or $10 minimum purchase for credit card use. And I know it has always left me wondering, on average, how much do these merchants charge these businesses per transaction? And, you know, those signs obviously lead me to believe that no matter what the amount is, I'm the one paying for that merchant transaction as a consumer. Is that about right?
Well, I know that those can be frustrating, but the reason that you'll see that, especially at convenience stores and places where they might be taking smaller credit card payments, is that when they accept your credit card, they're getting charged two fees. One is called a discount rate, which is a percentage fee, and it's typically between 2 and 3%. And then there's what they call a processing fee or a transaction fee, and that's usually a flat fee of anywhere from about 10 to 25 cents in most cases. It can range a little bit. It can be higher or lower. But for example, if you go to a convenience store and you buy like a pack of gum for a dollar, if they're paying 2% on that transaction and 25 cents, then essentially they just paid 27% on that ability to sell you a pack of gum. And so the reason they charge that, they have that $10 minimum, is that they're just trying to make sure that they're able to maintain their profit margins on the transactions that they're doing. Because if they're doing all small transactions, they need to make sure that they can actually maintain their margins. And so essentially you're not paying the fees for the merchant in that case. There are times that you may be doing that, and they call that surcharging in the industry, where they may add a percentage to your payments, like a 3 to 4% transaction fee. Typically, you'll see that more along the lines of utility payments or government payments, things where you basically have to pay them, and so they can sort of get away with charging you a surcharge.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize that it fluctuated from industry or business to business. I thought it was kind of everyone had kind of a standard operating procedure across the board.
It can vary for a lot of different reasons. You know, primarily it's the processor that you're working with and the pricing that you agreed upon when you signed up for services with them. So, and then even from there, there can be a lot of things that cause that price or that discount rate and that transaction fee to vary.
Now, we always hear a lot about credit card fraud. How big of a problem is it, and how can consumers protect themselves?
Yeah, fraud is a major problem, but we're seeing that card brands start to do a much better job of preventing it. When it comes to protecting yourself, there's a few different things. One is that, say, with Google Pay and Apple Pay, they have the ability to give you a credit card number that isn't your normal credit card number to do a transaction. So if you're buying something from a website that you've never bought from before and you're not really sure about the security of that website, then you can use Google Pay or Apple Pay to generate a dummy credit card number for you. And that will allow you to make that transaction and protect your card information. The other way that is common for people to have their credit card information stolen is through gas station pumps. Mm-hmm. And what will happen is that somebody will put a little card reader over the gas station's payment reader, mm-hmm. and they're almost impossible to notice unless you grab it and sort of try to pull it off. What they do is they skim your credit card information through that and steal it, and then they go out and spend some money with it.
For those vendors, whether it is gas stations or small businesses, does that fraud impact them in some way?
It does. And in most cases, if a business takes a fraudulent payment, they are the ones who end up having to pay for that transaction. So not only do they get charged penalties and fees, plus they have to pay for the fraud of that transaction, they also lose their merchandise or whatever time they had for that service they put out. So it can be very expensive for business owners to take fraudulent payments. And if it happens too much, they can even lose their ability to process credit cards because the banks will essentially blacklist them from being able to accept credit cards.
It's really interesting. I think we've all heard about how fraud affects consumers, but I'd never really realized how it affects businesses as well. When we're talking about protection, privacy is obviously another really important topic. And I wonder if there's a big variation in how credit card merchants handle privacy, or are there just like a very basic set of laws in place?
It's not so much handled on a law basis, like through the government. It's more of a policy thing. And, you know, the card brands really, it's a banking system, so they take privacy very seriously. And it's not really an issue with the processors or the banks or any of the networks when it comes to privacy. It really actually comes down to the more like the websites that you make purchases from. There's a lot of different ways that they could take your payments, and some are more secure than others. And so what can happen where your privacy is potentially exposed in some way is that your card information and other information is stored on a server somewhere with the website that you've made a purchase from. And then a hacker goes in and is able to, you know, hack that server and steal all of that information. That's really the more common way that that kind of information becomes exposed.
As a consumer, is there anything I can do to protect myself even more?
I would say one of the things you can look for when you're doing a purchase online is to make sure that the website itself is secure. And one way to look for that is in the address bar of your browser, you'll see a little lock icon either to the left or right. It depends on the browser that you're using, but you'll see a lock icon and it'll indicate whether or not it's a secure website. If it's, in some cases, it looks like a closed lock and it's green, and that lets you know, you can actually click on it and it'll tell you that this is a secured website and that the information that's going through it is going through what they call an SSL. Mm-hmm. And, it protects your information a lot better. You know, just making sure that you're not buying things from websites that look sketchy. Or another common one is, you know, getting an email and then clicking through that email to go to the website that you want to buy things. Sometimes scammers, what they'll do is they spoof websites and they spoof emails, and they'll send out emails and say, hey, check out this great deal or something. And you click through, and what you actually have done is given your information over to a scammer. And so what it's best to always just go to your browser and type the web address that you want to, or go to Google and type for the merchant that you're looking for, and then go directly to the website. And that's one of the best ways to protect yourself from what they call phishing fraud.
Now, I have to admit to something. I actually don't carry a single dollar, a single dime in my wallet. I don't even carry my wallet anymore sometimes. I'm actually paying most of everything with Apple Pay, with the credit card that's on my phone. Just how fast is this field changing and growing?
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying is extremely common. Cash is becoming way less common to transact with. I used to carry some cash on me, and I almost never have cash on me now. The last time that I looked up this data, Apple Pay and Google Pay, like smartphone payments, had increased by 29% over the last year, or since the start of the pandemic.
Wow.
And so it's seen huge growth. We're still not quite at the halfway mark of people using their smartphones to make payments. We're still under 50%, but the trend line looks like by the year 2025, we'll have surpassed 50% of all people with smartphones will have used their phone to make a touchless transaction, or will be doing it regularly.
Considering that that is a digital device that you are transacting on, and then it goes into like another set of digital kind of world. Are there any other extra challenges there instead of having that card?
Well, you know, I mean, it's considered more secure for one to do a payment like that, because when you take that kind of payment, it's sort of what I spoke about before, which is the credit card information that it gives the machine is a different number than your actual credit card number.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's more secure to do it that way. As a business, all that you need is to work with your credit card processor to make sure that you have the equipment to take those payments. And virtually every credit card processing company out there now has some sort of device that will let you take that payment from a smartphone.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, basically everywhere I go now, yeah, you can pay with your phone. It's not a problem. Now, there are some other really interesting trends out there in terms of digital payments, and there's also blockchain and Bitcoin. I wonder if you're tracking any particular trends that you find really interesting.
Sure. You know, with the cryptocurrencies, it definitely is a trend. I don't really see that as a huge payment trend just yet. Really, the only place that I see that happening is in the NFT space, is really more with like high-end expensive art, because the transaction fees are still very high to transact in Ethereum, which is the main cryptocurrency that people use for that. But besides that, the main trends that I'm seeing right now are really more a move towards peer-to-peer payments through apps like Cash App and Venmo.
Mm-hmm.
The main reason being is that there's little to no fees to make those purchases or exchange money through those apps. And so you're seeing smaller, you know, individual operators and entrepreneurs using these apps to accept payments because they don't want to pay the fees for the credit card payments. And typically, they're still processing maybe just a few hundred to a few thousand dollars a month. And so it doesn't really make sense for them to have a full-on credit card processing app on their phone yet. And their customers are more than willing to pay them through a Venmo or a Cash App.
Entrepreneurs are always finding creative ways to save. Philip, thank you so much for your time and for your insight. I feel like I've learned so much.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. This was fun.
You can learn a lot more about credit card merchants and processing by visiting Philip's website, www.cardpaymentoptions.com. And you can find hundreds of other exceptional experts at www.rollyapp.com. I'm Catalina Villegas, and you can always connect with me on social media at Catalina Official, OFFCL, on Twitter, IG, or Facebook. Until next time.